Good evening, and welcome to this non-hold episode of the Under the Helmet podcast. Your host, Terrence Biggs. With me is Mississippi Dynasty wide receiver, Jack State alum, Corey Tucker. What's up, Tuck?
What up, Terry? How you doing today?
I mean, do we just get out of the way and just kind of discuss what people heard today?
I mean, we can just jump right into it.
I mean, you heard it. You didn't participate, you know, for lack of a better term, make that make sense.
I mean, I kind of heard, well, I did hear, and then I got his point that he was just trying to get across above all. He was just, he wanted Storm to have that respect. But at the same time, as well as you go about it, I think that's what it was, because it was like he can't. I mean, Matt was hitting it on the head this morning. Pretty spot on, actually, though. And I think Eugene actually hit it, too. I mean, the media job is to, you know, report. I mean, it's not their job to validate you, but it's your job to, you know, do your job, so to speak. So a lot of it, it's just how people go about it. Because the internet beefing ain't it.
I mean, as we are recording this, it's still happening. It's still going on. And I'm like,
I mean, I think it's the trolling now, because I just seen something right before the call in. They was asking who was that guy from the Gators. Like, everybody don't know who Eugene is.
To me, it's funny because you have, you know, I dropped in the main league trash talk, you know, the method from November about a proposal. I'm like, that's creepy to start with. And it's just funny now. It's just, you got your attention, but you didn't want that type of attention. Like you said, it's how you go about it. And if you're focusing on what the media says, shouldn't you be focusing on your opponents?
Yeah, but, like, I think they was using it the wrong way. They was taking it like, oh, the media got us down, the media got us down. We can't, you know, like, give us our respect. When the flip side, it was like, okay, what are we going to show them? Like, anybody that down talk, like, naturally, if you flying under the radar and you underrated, the way you make a splash is by proving them wrong. Mm-hmm. And once you prove them wrong, you do that by making a run. You do that every Saturday. You don't do it just by saying, put some respect on our name. Now, I do that because, I mean, I just like to, I like to have fun and try to make the game more interesting on some Saturdays with incentive drops.
I think the conversation should have ended when the question of how many teams above 500 have you beaten?
And yeah, that's what,
I don't know. Well, one.
Yeah, that was a valid point. That was a valid point. But, I mean, that's why I said I saw it from both sides. Like, you haven't won. You haven't been a team over 500, so there's no quality win. The only quality win is the Thrashers. So, technically, mm-hmm. you're right on pace for you. You know, any of those games can go either way. And then, like he said, he wasn't there when the Storm first came in with that 1-3 record. Because, see, that's what a lot of people riding off of what they already seen. So mm-hmm. y'all came out and y'all was 1-3 last year. So you can't expect to get much. The expectation for everybody for the organization isn't as high as you want it to be because of what you've already shown us on film. Now, you start putting it together, and I think Matt hit it perfectly, though, when he was talking to the Thrashers owner. And he, I'm going to say this, he carried himself with some class and some respect and didn't. So shout out to him. The Thrashers owner. But he definitely hit it on, and he said it exactly. Although the Thrashers are winning, they haven't did anything yet. They're writing their story now. So it's like, they're a great team, and they're going to be great, but you're only judged by what you really do in the playoffs. And it's sad to say that, but I mean, just look at all the greats. You want to be a Karl Malone, or you want to be a Jordan?
Be Patrick Ewing or be Shaq?
So I get what, you know, the Thrashers on the heat, like he said, we got one thing in mind, winning. We haven't made a name for ourselves, but that's what we're in the process of doing. And how do we do that? We win. We make a playoff run. He, that was he got some media training. It's him. Mm-hmm. he spoke it like a true media day.
Cam answered every question, and it was perfect. This is how, when you have a team spokesman, like your owner, like all of Dynasty, like I don't think I've ever heard of a bad Dynasty interview. I've interviewed, 8 to 10 of your players. Never heard a bad interview. Never. I've interviewed Mike, still good interview. It was honest, and it's one of those things that it translates to. You get respect by what you do in the field and what you do off the field. And for me, it was interesting. Now, one of the things I want to kind of, now that we put this to sleep, because, after asking for where the energy is and not receiving it or not even, hearing the energy or stuff like that, we're going to put that to sleep in that little category over here. Now, fast forward to this upcoming week. I'm looking at their schedule. It's kind of interesting where you got the Phantoms, who actually saved their season with a victory last week. They actually they have 4 games left. They have saved their season. They play the 4-2 Gators in Pensacola. I think this is the remake, the rematch of, or the makeup game from when it was canceled before. Do you think that the Phantoms can sneak by the Gators, or do you think the Gators are just testy and want to take out their frustrations on somebody?
No, I think the Gators are refocused. I think the Gators need something that's going to – I just think the Gators are refocused. And like Eugene said this morning, they kind of got – they was riding high of the first week win. And, they kind of just got lost their character. Like you said, they're just now coming into – who they are, and that's when everybody team to make that finish strong push, and I don't see the Gators dropping one, because then that means they're going to have to be on the road for most of the playoffs.
That'll be a hard road. Now, the next one is, believe it or not, it's kind of interesting because of the travel involved, but you got the Blackhawks traveling the Pedal, Mississippi, and facing the Hellcats. They're an interesting team. They have a good pass rusher in Kwasi Myers, and they have pieces here and pieces there. Do you think they can keep this game close?
Not even. Although they have a pass rush, what do they have offensively? Not much of anything. Like, O-line is suspect at best. They just struggle with just a regular 4-man rush. Look like they do a lot of bubble swing concept type stuff. So they got to be able to push the ball down the field. And I just don't see them doing it against the Blackhawks.
Now, another game that I kind of interesting in looking into is the Metro Atlanta Horsemen hosting the Georgia Noles. The Horsemen have climbed back into playoff contention and quiet as kept. They might be the team in the East, kind of in the bottom half of the playoff bracket. They might be a hard out. They run the ball effectively. They have strong along both lines. They have a excellent receiver in Chris Williams. Do you think that the Noles, with their ground and pound, will be able to keep the Horsemen at bay?
No, it'll be a tight game. I say like a 10-12, but I give it to the Horsemen. And because of what you said, the Horsemen will be a hard out. So if any team that, that they come against, they can either ruin that team chances or, So I think that's kind of where they're playing it. Like, we still got some stuff that we can put on and show. So let's try to make a push themselves, because they try to make the playoffs. So I think it'll be a 12-10, but I give it to the Horsemen.
Now, we had a full this weekend. The Alabama Wolfpack couldn't finish the season, therefore the Steel City Raptors get that victory. Now, when teams fold, especially if on your schedule, have you had to look at the schedule with the Dynasty and saw a team fold? What does that do to the organization as far as when you're looking at it, as far as to prepare and just to hear the word of teams fold? What does that do?
On to the next, really. It gives us an extra week to prep for the following, clean up some mistakes, you know, get extra film study on your previous team, and better yet, film study on yourself. I think that's most important. Like, you should know your own tendencies, because then you know how teams going to try to attack you, so you can be ready for a counterpunch. Kind of like what y'all were talking about this morning with the power stuff, honestly. if teams, all they see is you running power, throw a counter in there. You know, that is bust out the backside wide open. Just break your own tendencies by that extra week when somebody fold on you.
That is true. Now, the one of the games of the week is the West Mobile 49ers going to Slidell, Louisiana, and facing the Biola-Combe Cardinals. The 49ers are 4-1. The Cardinals are 7-0. And they're both at the top of the APDFL West. Now, they've each, you know, they're 11-1 combined. Have the Cardinals earned your respect?
I mean, I can't sit right here and say that they suck and they're undefeated. So I can't say that. I just say, you know, they've been in some slugfest. Their game's been low-scoring, muddy football. And I think that plays to their advantage. It's kind of like you when you go to Denver and you playing in the altitude. Mm-hmm. I think that it fits them to have the game, you know, mucked up. So, and then if the rain is coming through, it's going through. So it's going to be like that again. So I'm actually picking the Cardinals for this one.
I think I'll pick the Cardinals for this one. They're at home, and
it's going to be muddy again.
It's going to be muddy. They took their lumps when they entered the league, but they're putting together a fairly decent program. Another game I'm interested in is the Louisiana Lightning and the Panhandle Crusaders. The Lightning have been crushed by injuries. They've had injuries on both sides of the ball, both sides of the line, up and down. However, at 3-4, they have three games left to kind of, they might have to try to run the table. The Crusaders came off a loss against the Phantoms. Do you think that the Crusaders will solidify their playoff spot, or do you think the Lightning can make this late season surge?
Lightning just too beat up with injuries. I think it'll be competitive at first, but then I think Panhandle will pull on off. Like you said, Lightning just banged up, honestly. But it will be good to see what they do over the next three games. They can mess up somebody else's playoff run. And like I was saying earlier, knock their seeding down, make a team go on the road, you know. So it'll be fascinating to see what they do, but they don't have enough of Panhandle due to injury.
Another one is Saturday night, the Dynasty head to New Orleans, and they face the Kings. Now, when these teams get together, there's always talking and there's always hard hitting. Two questions. Are you playing this one? And how do you see this one breaking down?
To answer the first question, I'm active from here on out.
Oh.
And the second part of that, the highest thing pointed out, is we're going to go out there and handle business. I'm not going to sell the tickets, like, and hype it up. We're just going to go out there and play ball. And we're going to keep on trucking. It's time we actually put it all together. So this is the first step in that.
Now, when we come back, I want to delve more into the Dynasty because I got a few questions about the rest of the season and beyond. You're listening to the Under the Helmet podcast on FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Helmet Podcast. Terrence Biggs, Corey Tuck. When you look at the Dynasty and you look at the struggles that you've had this season, you're still sitting at 4-2. And it's a strange spot to think about the three-time defending APDFL champions as being a team that's a hard out and will have to probably go on the road the rest of the way to get to the championship. Do you think that the path that you've taken this season as a team will actually help you be stronger at the end?
Yes, I think adversity always builds character. So, you know, when you're going through it, you know, it's always a lesson in it. You just got to figure it out. And this was, you know, our gut check year type thing, you know, new pieces here, you know, getting it together. Of course, we want to go undefeated, but we didn't. I mean, it's okay. We've done that already. We're going for something bigger. Like you said, those regular season losses. It's uncharacteristic, but it isn't something that, you know, that everybody just blew it up. Like, the Dynasty ain't who we, Dynasty ain't what they are. They ain't got the best this, you know, they ain't the same team type thing. Oh. And then, like you said, the traveling, we travel well. So that wouldn't be an issue. So.
And if you look at the team in parts and you look at the fact that you've only allowed, so we're going to do some point counting here, 10, 24, 44, 63 points in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So pretty much 10 points a game. Your last four are the Kings, the Lightning, the Crusaders, and the Hellcats. You leave Mississippi once this weekend. The last three games of the road, last three games of the season are in within the state of Mississippi. Standing at 4-2, that could be 8-2. I know you take it one game at a time, but you could be staring 8-2. And there's a good chance that if you run the table, then you could be home for the majority of the playoffs, and you travel well. What has been the difference in this season as far as the vibe? I know you had lost a couple of games, but what's the vibe around the team? You have a lot of veterans, and are some guys thinking about retirement, or is it more of like rebuilding and reloading on the fly?
I can't really speak for it, but I think it's more so, you know, people are just looking. I don't know. Some guys are possibly thinking about retirement, but everybody's out there having fun. Because no matter what happens, if you dress out, you playing type thing. If you put on them pads, they're saying that you're here to play. But I just think it's, you know, like you said, we reloaded offensively. We added some key play. Well, we added some areas that we just had to iron out the wrinkles offensively. Most of the defense is still the same defense. So, like we said, we had a new quarterback that played, what, four games before COVID actually happened. I've only played with him, like, twice or something like that. It's offensively, we just haven't had enough time together. But, you know, that's why – that's all on the fly. That's more so what I think it is. Because it always takes the offense a little bit longer to come together than the defense.
Now, of the players that might be thinking about hanging up, that's not you, right? You still feel as though you could do this for a few more years.
Yeah, I'm very much still active. If I can still – if Lord's will, I'm still be playing to figure it out.
Yeah,
I got some more reason to make up for.
See. Now – here's the thing. A couple of other games. The Tigers and the Predators. Our guy Matt Kelly. The Predators look like if they are to make the playoffs, and they are the seventh seed right now. These are the games that they need to start putting away. They're facing a Tigers team at 3-4, which they have pieces too. But if you look at the Predators' schedule, they have the Tigers and the Blackhawks. I think if they split these, they have a shot of that 7C. Do you agree?
Yes, I agree. And then, like you said, with the Tigers, they play a team like that. If you look at EAP and how they played all year, it's not that they don't have the talent or their defense. The score is misleading, I'm going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have a great defense. So if offense can give the defense – just a little bit more time to rest, I'm sure the defense can bring it on in for them for the Tigers. Now, when they face that the most slept-on team in the league.
The Blackhawks?
Yes. I don't know how they're not in no – like, I don't know. Bruce done threw camouflage over them or something. They don't get no beef or nothing.
They just play.
Right.
And they don't talk. And they just show up and they play. They travel well. They show up and they just start just mowing people down. It's one of those things that is consistent. Like, that Blackhawks team, like I said, has slept on because no one talks about them because they don't talk about themselves. They just let their game kind of handle their own business. And it leads to the game of the week, or one of the games of the week. You got the Georgia Thrashers and the Unconquered Cobras. They play in the Cobras' backyard. Now, we still don't know the medical status of quarterback Kyvon Taylor, but if he's able to play, you got two potent defenses. You got two strong defenses and two potent offenses. Why do I feel this might be a high scoring game?
I had that thought initially, but I don't think it's gonna be a high scoring game when you look at it. If I can brainstorm a little bit, mm-hmm. I think they'll probably try to bracket the outside as far as the Thrashers. They'll probably try like some type of bracket defense to just keep the ball in front of them and just make it long drives. Like you said, they're both great defenses. And then on the flip side, I think the Cobras are going to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you haven't noticed, when before he got knocked out, the Thrashers, they were looking for the home run ball a lot of the times. And that's good, but it also can be your biggest downfall. Sometimes you just got to take what the defense gives you. And if he plays, I just want him to take what the defense gives you, and it's still going to be long drives. So it'll slow the game down. And I don't see it being a high scoring game, maybe like 21-24-ish at best.
Even if it's not a high scoring game, it's going to be a hard hitting game because this year the Cobras, they brought a defensive line. Like Coach Antonio Ivey has a defensive line, and they get home quickly up the middle and around the edges, and they have no soft spot on that defensive line. And now that they have a defense, they don't have to win games anymore like 38-35. I mean, they have the firepower. And you speak of the Blackhawks being slept on. Marcus Brooks, the quarterback from the Cobras, I think he has, 15 touchdowns and one pick. That slept on. I know that Kyvon Taylor right now is in the clubhouse as the potential MVP favorite, but 15 touchdowns and one pick, and he's completing like 63% of his passes. So, speaking of, I'll go ahead.
I was like, he got good weapons, but another thing that I saw when I actually watched the Storm play, mm-hmm. The Thrashers' offensive line, I don't think we speak enough about the offensive line. They keep that quarterback clean. Like, and that he have more than enough time. It was several times, even with them blitzes, because they always dogged. Every other play, they was always sending them back. They picked up the blitz for the most part, and they kept him clean. It wasn't until they started reaching out at his arm that he kind of got rattled in the pocket a little bit. So the Thrashers got an offensive line that can match up well with the Cobras defensive line. So, like I've been saying, I'm ready to see this. I'm going to have to catch somebody live or something after the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm ready for that film to drop.
I can't wait for that film to drop because it's one of those games that it's exciting. It's one of those previews. Now, as we move into, because you know that the three of us, well, if Matt is still playing, we'll have to discuss the whole top 50 thing, kind of the order, but are there any players that you've seen, regardless of team, that think you might sneak on that list?
He's small. and Little, and I'm gonna say number five though from Storm could. Cause what's funny, you look on the film, he everywhere. I'm not even gonna lie. Number five from the Storm could crack the bottom just by looking at that one game with the Thrashers. He was all over the place. And then, if I'm not mistaken, they put him in the backfield, and he went both ways. Unless there was another number five. So I would say him. I don't know his name, but him.
One of the guys that I saw that kind of stuck out is, believe it or not, he's been in the top 50, but Jamarius Green from the Gators. Like, they have a full backfield, but if he's getting like almost 7 yards a clip and four scores, he might also break into that backfield. And believe it or not, Airman Quentin Patrick, he plays linebacker. He has three rushing touchdowns. That dude is. They give him the ball in the backfield, and he is about 250. And they just let him go. They just let him get in the backfield. But on defense is one of those things that your buddy from the Titans, he has six picks. The one that, you know, you decided to rough up that guy.
Oh, yeah.
He leads the league in interceptions. He's one more than Chris McCray, two more than Roderick Turner, Jabari Moore, Mark Battle, Ja'Cory Smith. And he's having a good year.
You don't say it, or do you want me to?
You can say it.
It's how you get the pick. If it's one of them, I'm punting the ball, but I'm tight throws, I'm just going to heave it over here. I can't. Now, I don't know. So I'm not saying that's his situation. That's the one thing when people start talking about the picks they got.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did you come by the pick? Was it just a quarterback back then and they just throwing it up for grabs? Or were you actually out here in coverage and you sat on something and you picking it? Now, that's not to him, but that's to that category itself, to saying, oh, I'm leading the league at INT. Now, I have to turn on the film and I can see how those come about. But he's leading the league, so he's having a good year. I'm going to say that. I'm not going to be a hater. Again, he's leading the league in picks. And I do expect that same energy if we meet.
Now, if you look at the other stats, like tackles, we've been through this, right? There's one team with one, two, three, four people in the top 10.
They play a lot of defense, Terry. The defense stay on the field for four people to be in the top of tackle. And we done talked about how great these other defenses are. Come on, man. Make that one make sense.
I can't. I cannot. It's I don't even know what to say to this, because it just, you know, I feel like I'm being redundant, and it's like I'm looking at this list, and I know I've seen Quentin Patrick and they're doing work. I've seen Chris Fowler from the Vikings do work. Loper from the Hellcats. Jason Williams, Harry Burke, Matt Kelly, Malcolm Jackson, all those dudes. It's just like, how do you have two and three, right? They have 17 solo tackles and 69. Sorry, they have 34 solo tackles and 69 assists. If you look at the top five, three on the same team, 52, 51, and 46. I don't know. One of the things I do want to look at is kick returns, because they return specialists don't really get the proper respect, and I just the return specialists league are they actually fair. There's a guy from the Raptors. A lot of these names are guys who are just they're return experts, and it's interesting to see if one stands out. Now, if you look at the rest of the season, what surprise you think we'll have left? Because if we look a couple of years ago, the Prattville Patriots made that run where they're 0-5, and it looked like they were about to not make the playoffs, but they won 5 in a row and they got to the championship game. Do you think they have a team in that type of respect where they're kind of building that quiet monster?
We said it all year, the Blackhawks. Like, nobody, let's just be honest. Like Matt said, it was a three-sided race over there. But if you want to just be real, nobody has thought about the Blackhawks even coming out from the East. Nobody. Why? Because all you see the eye candy. You see the Thrashers' numbers, the passing yards, and then you see the Cobras' scoreboard numbers. So nobody's looked at the Blackhawks, and what's funny, it has made the Blackhawks like an underdog over there, honestly. I'm not saying that they are. So I see the Blackhawks, and what's funny, I think they have enough to knock off both. Well, they have enough to knock off the Cobras. I can't say knock off the Thrashers just off the strength of,
they beat them,
like, again, it's their first year. Yeah, it's their first year. So
the Blackhawks, it sets up perfectly for them because, like I said, no one's talking about them. They're literally, like you said, Bruce, Pat Campbell, J-Rob, they're working under the cover of darkness. And they're just kind of like real calm and real like subtle and kind of keeping it real quiet. But they don't really have.
Chris needs to be talking.
Huh?
I said because Chris, I think Chris McCarroll from them.
Mm-hmm.
He usually be over there talking. I know he do. It is a quiet year for them. Like, that's.
Go ahead.
Nah, that's it.
Like, he does, like, but. They just seem like they're laser focused, and that's a scary team. Like, you literally forget that they have only lost once. They've only lost once this entire season. Like, they lost to the Dynasty, right? Yeah. They're 5-1, and they don't really let up too many points, and they just pound teams. They just get on them, and then that defense will smother you. They have – I'm looking at their schedule now, and I'm looking at their defense. They haven't allowed double digits since March 13th when they allowed 28 to y'all. Since that game on March 13th, they've allowed 6 points in three games. They shut out the Wolfpack, they shut out the Vikings, and they – allowed 6 to the Airmen. And if you look at their schedule, the Airmen is a playoff team. That's a win. The Thrashers are a playoff team. That's a win. The Horsemen are a playoff team. That's a win. That's 3. And they lost to the Dynasty by 2 touchdowns. Coming up, they got the Hellcats, Titans, Predators, and Raptors. So theoretically, they will be facing 1-2 playoff teams, so they have a chance to win 5 of their 10 games against playoff teams. That's a hard schedule. Can you explain to people what strength of schedule means as far as why we count it so much?
Strength of schedule dictates pretty much the quality of win. It's just like if Alabama put all D3 schools on it, they can never be ranked number one because of competition level. Like, you're not playing nobody. You're playing the teams you're already supposed to beat. So when it's pretty much like, okay, you're pretty much evenly matched, like A minus, A plus, or A minus, A type of team caliber. Because, like, there's tiers within each league. You have, these are your top teams. So, you know, they're going to get you, everybody going to consider them a strong team. That's your top tier. You have the mid-tier teams that are, you know, the 4-5, the right at 500, and then you have the below 500 teams. So if you're still only the majority of your schedule is made up of those bottom two tiers, your strength won't be strong, so it is weighted heavily because you can go out and beat all 12 U teams and have an undefeated record. But did you play anybody worth, you know, worth saying? Everybody understands what strength schedule is. Like, they get it. They get the concept. So I don't know what's the misconception about it. You have a hard road. You come out on top. You number one, or you take some bumps. It doesn't penalize you as much as if you were to lose to an unranked team, so to speak.
Like, there are no moral victories in the league, and we get the league is a victory-driven league. And to me, it's about coming in with toughness. Because if you look at, we talked about the Horsemen before. They played, their first game was against the Blackhawks. And that was their reintroduction into the league. That's hard. That's one of those things that it's a welcome to the league moment. And the Blackhawks put something on them, but yet they came back, they rebounded, they lost the disputed game to the Seahawks, and then they lost to the Thrashers, but they've rebounded, and now they've faced the Noles and the Gators. They split one of those two, they should be in good shape. Now, as far as the number one seed, do you think that the number one seeds will stay the same in the Cobras and the Cardinals?
Yeah. I mean, it. Yeah, because I think the Thrashers lost to the Storm will hurt their case. So, say for example, the Thrashers beat the Cobras. I don't think it'll jump the Cobras out of their number one spot simply because the Thrashers lost to the Storm. And then the Blackhawks is sitting right over there. And I think the Blackhawks probably may have had a stronger schedule than the Storm. So I don't think it'll be much shakeup if the Cobras were to lose. And the same could be said for the Cardinals simply because everybody on this side has a two loss. Except for them. So even with one loss, they'll still have the head-to-head over everybody except for Panhandle. But I think Panhandle done lost, what, two as well?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so it'll be no change. It's just the two seeds is what's open for grabs right now.
If you look at just look down the way the Phantoms have a nightmare, their last four games, all on the road. They go this weekend. They go to Pensacola to face the Gators. The following weekend, they go to Macon to face the Noles. They go back to Monticello. And they face the Cobras again, and they finish at the Tigers in Atlanta. Going to Atlanta is a long way from Orlando. Honestly, if they can get two of these wins, you got to see how the rest shakes out. If the Orlando Phantoms make the playoffs, it would be one of the better stories in the league this year.
Yeah, because of how they got there, especially how the tail end, like you just said. I just hope everybody done booked their rooms. I'm gonna say that, so that won't be an issue.
Wow.
But I've been like I may be one of the biggest critics of Mr. Torres. But I also been cheering them on. So I want them to make the playoff. Because if they don't, I just know I'm for all that smoke, too. So it's like, I want them to make the playoff because, again, he set the bar so high for his organization. So those are my expectations. So he got to make the playoffs. And it's plausible.
Mm-hmm.
It's plausible. But they have to travel well, though, honestly. Hopefully they do travel well. Like you said, that Atlanta game is far. And Macon ain't no skip either, though. It's right up under Atlanta. So
I mean,
they got some frequent fire miles. They finna put to work.
if they pull off the playoffs with that last leg of their schedule, I mean, as much as we sit there and have our whatever's with the Phantoms, if they pull off that, there's got to be at least a little consideration for Coach of the Year for Coach Torres if they pull out, if they run a table.
I can't do that because if you look at it.
If they run a table.
But even still, if they run the table, I mean, it's a fantastic job, but you still got the Cobras head coach. The Thrasher guy. You have the Blackhawks because just, you know, I'm sure he done had a team meeting, kind of told them, you know, just play ball.
I just had some consideration, like at least a little like acknowledgement.
Get one vote. Yeah, okay, yeah. Because he can't be in that top three.
No, because right now Antonio Ivey is the runaway coach of the year.
Yeah, what they're doing is phenomenal.
Like they're not just beating teams; they're smacking the hell out of teams. They are punishing teams, and their one game that didn't actually. When they beat the Alabama Tigers 21-6 in that rain, it's still 21-6. That defense is, I can't even tell you, where it's, we can do some quick math, 19, 34, 40. 48 points in seven games. So less than a touchdown. Haven't allowed a double-digit scoring from an opponent since March 20th, month and a half.
Anything short than a conference championship game for them, I will be stopped. At least conference. So anything shorter than that, I definitely be stopped.
If they get to the championship and they face the Blackhawks, that will be the rematch of one of the most interesting games. There are Blackhawks players and people still thinking about that loss. And then if somehow the Dynasty get through the West and they have to face the Cobras again, that was the last championship this league saw. That game was a classic. And now you'll be doing it on turf in New Orleans. Now, it's one of those things that it's incredible to watch, and this season has definitely been exciting. Now, one of the last things I got to ask you is this, not related to the APDFL, but as a Jackson State alum, no HBCU player went drafted this weekend. A bunch had to sign via undrafted free agents, but what do you think caused that? Is it just the just one of those fluke things, or do you think that scouts have become lazy?
I don't think it's one of those fluke things, honestly, because swag football, black football, HBCU football has always been one of those slept-on footballs when it comes to, well, football leagues when it comes to drafting. Just being honest about it, it's been phenomenal players that done come through the swag and the MEAC, because that's majority of the HBCUs, and then you have some D2 and D3 schools. But, like, the Aggies had the guy from Tyree Cohen.
Yep.
He was drafted. Most of the time, out of HBCUs, they'll get a lineman, honestly. A lineman would get drafted before a skid. But it just surprises me that it doesn't surprise me. It throws me because Belichick can go get six round, find somebody from Sandlot University that's a small NAIA school, right? Draft him. But you can have the sweat player of the year have to sign free agents. The MEAC, the eighth, like these big time name players as well known around HBCU conversations. Have to sign free agent just to for them to say, oh, well, we signed you. I think it should be a rule. What is in the pros? They have like a running rule or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's called. And they're not even following that, where they have to, you know, give an African American or a person of color an interview or something like that, mm-hmm. or you have to have one.
They can't get around it.
Right. I think that should apply to the draft. Deion said, you know, leveling out playing field, and then you see some of these Hall of Fame names getting thrown into the conversation for some of these HBCU programs. That's literally the only way that you can, at this point, it's becoming like the only way the HBCUs are starting to get the attention that they once had to bring the luster back. It's like you have to bring your money back here, or not necessarily your money, but you have to refocus the light. Because, you know, before everybody started going to the Power Fives, HBCU ball was the way to go. And they was NFL was shopping big time at HBCUs.
I still remember when Steve McNair got drafted by at the time the Houston Oilers, and that was a giant deal. And I thought, you know, this can be every year. Like, in the same draft, Hugh Douglas went to Central State of Ohio. That's a HBCU in Ohio, which is strange to hear. But I honestly, there are two groups of people I blame for this. I blame the networks, where HBCU football should not have to be on ESPN3.
Right.
Like, it really should be on ESPN2, because honestly, no one wants to watch Northwestern play Iowa in football. Like, seriously. It's boring. We're going to run the ball 15,000 times between the tackles. No one wants to see that. Secondly, as much as I hate to say this, some of these conference heads and some of these school presidents, kind of bogus. Like, you got to fight more for your schools. You got to go to... Go ahead.
It's enough blame to throw around, because even if you look at like some of these networks, any network could have took the initiative to just pick up, you know, HBCU ball. Like it's a weird spot. Like SEC got their own network. SWAC, of course, isn't going to have their own network, but you have Fox Sports South that covers the Southern Heritage Classic every year. You can have games on there. There's a lot of outlets that could be used and utilized. And like you said, some of the presidents don't go to bat. Some people are too close-minded. Like when Deion came to Jackson, how some of the coaches was just like, he's kind of like talking too much, or he's kind of letting too many cameras into the locker room type thing. You gotta market yourself. You gotta. Just like the networks can give you an opportunity, but the schools also have to make themselves attractive to the market. That's the way to put it. Because that Glass from A&M,
mm-hmm.
he can throw the ball. That boy can throw the ball. And he's coming back next year. So, like, and he's... It's sad, but watch, he won't be, if he have a phenomenal year next year, he won't be in any major award category that's not limited to FCS or black ball.
True.
And watch, like, that's not fair.
That's on so many people. It's on so many people where, like I said, I have issues with so many school presidents and administrations where they're just happy that their games are going to be shown on whatever ESPN 12 or 14. It's tiring. Nah, it needs to be on regular ESPN or ESPN 2. They deserve the respect that the WAC gets. They deserve the respect that the Mountain West gets. They're on that target. They're on that level. Why can't these players actually get this sort of respect? And some of that is on the media. I'm sorry. Like not just the networks, but some of the reporters who just ignore it. We just ignore HBCU talent. There's no way that an entire draft happened without one HBCU player. One. Man, it's craziness. Now, when you saw your team draft in this last draft, were you happy with who they brought back?
Let me tell you what's funny about that. It's a rivalry within on the team. So last year, not this past year, but the year before that, didn't they get Stidham from Auburn?
Mm-hmm.
So they got Stidham from Auburn. Okay. So now they draft Mac Jones from Alabama with the potential of going to get Jimmy G. Like, I was excited, but I'm still a fan of Cam. I just think they need some weapons, but they did re-up and get some.
They got a lot of weapons.
I can't complain right now. That's for the future, because they looking. Cam got another 1 year deal, so they're looking at the future. But they got a lot of undeveloped talent coming in, or just right there, because now you're gonna have Stidham and Mac Jones fighting it out. And I'm just not that sold on Mac Jones.
Mm-mm.
Because he was surrounded with talent. You can't. That's just like Devontae Smith when he went on Shea Sharp's show and said he's the best receiver to come out of Alabama. But let's just be real. If Julio had the same system, they wouldn't know who Devontae Smith, they wouldn't be comparing everybody to. Julio would have ran away with everything. Probably had the most yards by any receiver, bar none. So, who knows? Mac Jones, I'm not sold because you had the best of the best. Now, let's see what you do when it's leveled out a little bit. You ain't fully loaded.
I guess with Mac Jones, I just see he's a winner, but I don't see that one undisputed trait, that one thing that makes him like a standout, like, oh, he has this quality. He doesn't do anything bad. He just doesn't do anything great.
Right. And you sat for 3 years. Because, mind you, everybody bashed Tua. Well, not necessarily bashed Tua, but they were like, Mac Jones way better than Tua. Then why didn't he beat him out for the position? Like, some of these conversations got to be addressed. Like, you say he's better than Tua, but he only played, what, 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was a starter for 1 year? Come on now. Like.
Man, listen. Like, the Raiders picked a tackle that they could have had in the second round. And their reasoning was, well, he was our number one player on our draft board. He was the only the number one player on their draft board and no one else's. They
yeah,
so bad.
Quarterback.
Oh God, yes. I hate Derek Carr. Like Derek Carr is this guy. On physical skill, he is in that, not super close to Aaron Rodgers as far as physical, but he shows similar traits. But between the ears, he's a hot mess. How do you, as an organization, how do you keep a quarterback for 7 seasons who's never won a playoff game, who's below 500 as his record, has had one winning season in 7 seasons?
Tony Romo effect.
I don't know. Romo's a Hall of Famer, though.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I don't know. I would love to have an organization backing like that. Because he got the front office. The front office got his back no matter what. And they haven't even attempted to make any moves to find a replacement or to put competition in that room. From what I've been able to see, it's like they'll draft pieces or they'll trade off pieces, but they're never addressing the quarterback issue. And I'm not sold on Derek Carr. I was when he first got there. I'm not even going to lie. First out of Fresno State, I was with it. He's better than his brother. I was with it. You know, when Amari went over there, I'm like, okay, Derek Carr got somebody to throw it to. That didn't pan out. You know, people blamed Amari. They blamed Coop. But Coop gone.
Mm-hmm.
Coop gone.
And has made the Pro Bowl every year.
So.
It's all Carr.
Y'all
Carr
is going to trade for Rodgers.
Honestly, and people hate that I say this, but if the Denver Broncos trade for Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr will be the fourth best quarterback in that division. I mean, you got Mahomes, you got Rodgers, Justin Herbert is better than Derek Carr. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
You got Derek Carr fourth, and if Rodgers goes to the Broncos, the Raiders will not make the playoffs until Aaron Rodgers retires. And it's one of those things that, huh?
They're not going to do nothing to her. The Raiders, they're in love with Carr.
And it's dumb. Right. Like, it's Gruden. Gruden's a guy who, he's still sensitive that people think that he won his Super Bowl with the Buccaneers because he had Tony Jones' players, which he did. And he wants to kind of prove that he can build a franchise, which he can't. So it's one of those things that it's going to be a horror season.
Yeah, like, I'm just looking at all the pieces that he gave away, practically, for Brett Crump. And then the pieces he drafted. I mean, he got Josh Jacobs. He went, I was going to say Waddle. He went and got, not Waddle. What's the other guy?
Henry Ruggs.
Yeah, he went and got Ruggs. I mean, he ain't, they're not bad picks or bad draftees. They're just not addressing the real elephant in the room, and that's that quarterback spot, honestly.
Man, they had a chance to draft Devin White from LSU, the linebacker. He, in fact, had interviews saying, I want to go play with the Raiders. They drafted Cleveland Farrell. They drafted a run-stuffing defensive end who can't rush the passer. Fourth. And he won't get a second contract with this team. He has shown nothing. Like, he's slow off the ball. He can stop the run, but don't ask him to win. He had the lowest win rate, which is what they calculate is how many times you win. how many times you win versus a offensive tackle. He was one of the lowest in the league. Now, just awful. Now, before we step out of here, good luck to y'all this weekend. And we definitely will definitely have a long recap. This has been another episode of the Under the Helmet Podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.